student who announced to me in September 2021 that she now wanted to be referred to with a new male name. My immediate response to that was to raise a safeguarding concern, and I asked three questions. I asked, did we have parental consent? Was she making an informed decision? And was there a risk that she could self-medicate with cross-sex hormones? And I specifically referred to the violation of the college's drug policy if that latter question was positive. And I also referred to the Kira Bell case at the time about the risk of transgender regret. So yes, to make the point that this was a serious issue. When I went down to safeguarding to find what their response was, they told me that the college response is to not tell the parents. So basically to allow a student to transition in private and to support that in private without parental knowledge, and basically to ignore all the other questions that I had raised.
For the wrong to rule, the good must just stand idly by.
Hello, I am joined today by Kevin Lister, who's a former maths teacher, made the egregious error of pointing out some of the problems with social transitioning and trans ideology in schools. He was then fired. Kevin, thank you for joining me. Could you, for the sake of our audience, could you let people know, tell us a bit about yourself, tell us what led you to where you are today?
Sure. Thanks, Lawrence, and thanks for having me on. So my circumstances were, I was a maths teacher at New College Swindon. I had a student who announced to me in September 2021 that she now wanted to be referred to with a new male name. My immediate response to that was to raise a safeguarding concern, and I asked three questions. I asked, did we have parental consent? Was she making an informed decision? And was there a risk that she could self-medicate with cross-sex hormones? And I specifically referred to the violation of the college's drug policy if that latter question was positive. And I also referred to the Kira Bell case at the time about the risk of transgender regret. So yes, to make the point that this was a serious issue. When I went down to safeguarding to find what their response was, they told me that the college response is to not tell the parents. So basically to allow a student to transition in private and to support that in private without parental knowledge, and basically to ignore all the other questions that I had raised. So I was absolutely shocked. Literally the floor could have opened up and I could have fallen through it. I was absolutely amazed by what I heard. So I naturally did not support the social transitioning of the child. When I say a child, she was under 18, so still by international law is a child. Things progress along a bit. We have a maths competition, a girls' maths competition run externally, and she asks if she can still enter that, and I say, of course you can, because you're a girl. And that precipitates a quick conversation outside the classroom, and I encourage her as best as I can to enter the competition, and she subsequently chooses to enter the competition. So things progress on. I realize I'm walking on a tightrope. I've had no instruction by the college to tell me how to refer to the student. And I clearly don't want to dead name the student either. So I try to follow as gender neutral communication with her as possible. So later on in the year, I then have one of her friends who then tells me what I must do, and I must call her a he, and then she'll put a complaint in against me if I don't. And she subsequently did that, and then all hell breaks loose.
Can I ask a question at this point? Sorry. If she's agreed to enter the competition as a female competition, this is saying to me that there's a level of confusion here, isn't there?
And exactly, and that yeah, that was my perception at the time. I need to be very careful here when I say Lawrence as well, because the case is coming to court, and there's an anonymity order the other side are trying to place on the case. So everything I've said so far, the stuff which I've already said on other interviews and other media outlets. So I really can't say much more than that, but that's in essence where the problem started. The other thing I've said as well, and I'll say again now, just to fill in on the details, was I raised a second safeguarding concern about a teacher who was encouraging students to transition. So that also went in as my two safeguarding concerns. And basically because of those two safeguarding concerns, the college said I was transphobic, and that led to my subsequent dismissal.
Unbelievable. I mean, just where do you begin to unpack that? All right, so, I mean, just, it just makes me so annoyed. Right, you would have thought, first of all, I've got, I think any parent would be very, very concerned that the child is making these decisions without consulting the parents. The parents aren't being consulted, and B, that the school are actively stopping the parental involvement in these what can turn into life changing decisions. How did you feel about that personally?
It's terrible. It's not just life changing; it's life shortening, life restricting, life damaging. Yeah, this is serious harm that we have being pushed forward. Significant harm. So the idea that a young person, 17, 18, 19, can start taking high doses of cross-sex hormones without any evidence that that is of benefit, It's crazy. There is no way that you can take large amounts of drugs without it having adverse implications. And the adverse implications are severe. Yeah, for a young female taking male large doses of testosterone causes obviously huge body changes, that's the point. But it also causes cardiovascular problems, cancers, vaginal atrophy,
osteoporosis,
menopause. Yeah, osteoporosis. The list goes on and on and on.
Without any data that this we can't have any data because this whole phenomenon is so new. But without any data whatsoever to point to this is in any way benefits anyone.
And Lawrence, that's the other important thing. It's fine for you and I to say without any data, this thing doesn't have any legs. In the FOI release, and we'll talk about it later, from the Tavistock that a week and a half ago, looking at all the communications between the Tavistock and Mermaid, back in 2012, the Tavistock acknowledged in one of the correspondents that there is no data to support this at all. So they know that there's no data, yet they pushed it forwards.
Well, as we know, we're witnessing an attack on all things to do with sanity and culture. And one of the biggest tragedies is medicine stopping being medicine and starting to become ideology. Now, I think for most sane, sensible people, they've done it over a lot of the medical emergencies or evolutions in the last few years. There's this sort of argument between cock-up and conspiracy. So we've got, I often think some of the more radical woke stuff is just, it's a conspiracy without any conspirators. But what would you say about this, especially in terms of the Mermaid's Stonewall communication, sorry, Tavistock Mermaid's communication? Is there a conspiratorial element to this, or is it a conspiracy without any conspirators?
It's conspiratorial. I'm exactly with you that there's always that balance between cock-up and conspiracy, and my view in life is always to go for the cock-up as being the default position. That's exactly where I had been in terms of thinking this through. I just assumed it would be a cock-up that had cocked up on cock-up on cock-up on cock-up, and the cock-up had just developed more and more legs and momentum. After the FOI release, say a week and a half ago, the one that the Telegraph pushed for, it's clearly a conspiracy.
Can you can you point us towards anything in this documentation that leads towards conspiracy more than, you know, cock up?
Yeah, sure. So in July 2015, there was a meeting in Parliament. And it was a meeting held by members of the Lib Dem Party. There was Baroness, let me just get the names here, Baroness Barker and Helen Belcher. Helen Belcher is a male, identifying as a female, with representation from the Department for Education, the Government Equalities Office, and the Ministry of Justice, and five trans activist members from GEARS, Trans Alliance, and so forth. And they plotted precisely what to do and how to go about this. They targeted specifically the policy by the Department for Education. They identified specifically that there were schools at that time that were seeing children presenting in the opposite sex, and those schools were trying to stop that. And they worked out a strategy how to stop that. The mermaids at that time were saying how many families that they were representing with very young primary school age children. They had 10 or 20 families that they were representing where the children were under 10 years of age, and some of them were about to start moving into secondary school. They were trying to identify the schools that were at the forefront of transitioning so they could then mentor other schools. So they were already trying to build that escalating network of one school pushing on and supporting another school.
It feels to me absolutely insane. Because if this is something which is, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, a child or a young person who's entering a period of, you know, a fear of going through puberty, whatever it is, a fear of growing up, a body dysmorphia, any of this sort of stuff, that is, by its own definition, a medical issue. So if you were to transfer it over to something like chickenpox, it's like saying you've got a child with chickenpox, you get all, weirdly, chickenpox is a bad example because you have chickenpox parties to get everybody to have chickenpox. But it's like saying with someone with COVID, a child with COVID, to go get into school and infect everybody else. I mean, it seems to be madness as an approach.
Exactly. That idea of the infection, I think, is important. And once you create a positive environment for one child who is going through this and give him special privilege, and celebrate it and create a positive environment, it automatically encourages the other students in his peer group and elsewhere in the school to do the same thing. Mix in with that and trans activist teachers, and then you've got a recipe for absolute disaster. And you've got a way effectively of undermining the entire education system. So what effectively happens is the majority of students look to see the schools becoming indoctrination centers for the transgender ideology. And they lose all credibility for the teachers, for the educational structure, and we're already starting to see that breakdown in educational quality across the country. But let's say that this was a significant meeting. That, you know, and make no doubt about when we look at the history of this, and we see how this whole movement has generated such legs. That meeting, I think, will be one of the pivotal points of this entire movement, and it moves it from that arena of being cock up to conspiracy. It's and again, yeah, it's never very, very good sometimes to draw past historical comparisons. But I am a movie that always struck me was Kenneth Branagh's 2001 movie called Conspiracy, where he played Heydrich looking at the Wannsee meeting where they worked out how to implement the Jewish solution. And this is the same kind of thing. You have a bunch of technocrats and bureaucrats coming together, completely ignoring the science. They already know at this stage that there is no science, but they are going to implement policies by subterfuge, devoid of any democratic oversight, and those policies then get implemented. And that's the concerning thing. And one of the things that I learned, and I had no idea about this at all when I raised my first safeguarding concern, was how this movement has become structurally embedded in the entire education system. It's become institutionalized in the education system. And that's the word that we really need to start thinking about now, that the trans is institutionalized. It is there at the Department for Education at the very top with the Secretary of State for Education, who has done nothing. It's been there amongst all the civil servants who support her. It's supported by the unions. It's supported by the schools. It's supported by the Teacher Regulation Authority. It's supported by the safeguarding organizations and the local councils. They are all, certainly in my experience, all extremely pro-trans. And one of the things that they talked about in this July 2015 meeting was that a school somewhere, they didn't say which school it was, had referred a parent to safeguarding to the social service, local social services, because that parent was trying to transition a child. I think that's a perfectly good referral for that school to make. What we've got now is the opposite, that if a parent or a teacher raises a safeguarding concern about a student transitioning, that parent or that teacher will now be referred to social services for a safeguarding violation. We've had a 180-degree flip in terms of safeguarding policy, that to be trans now is a positive thing by safeguarding authority standards.
What's so interesting as well about this whole thing is the fact that, you know, as you say, you know, it's a 180-degree flip in policy and approach to what is essentially ideological capture. It is that as the person who's trying to call that out on behalf of keeping the structures in place which are the best, which are child safeguarding, making sure parents are aware, all of the things that are logical and reasonable, you are demonized and fired. That, to any parents out there, that must be absolutely terrifying to know that not only is this ideology rampant throughout all the structures of education, that anybody who's trying to represent the parents and the best interests of the child is demonized and fired. That's what I find terrifying.
You're absolutely right. And that's one of the lessons of history, is that where totalitarians and dictators take control, that the thing that always happens is that the institutions fail. So that's why in America, when Donald Trump was president, you know, you may or may not like him. I particularly loathe him, and I think some of the things he did was abhorrent. But the thing was, in America, the institutions held together and constrained his want to overturn the democratic process. What we are seeing in this country is that terrifying failure and collapse of systems, of regulating systems, of overseeing systems, of key institutions like education. To see all of those institutions being overturned one after another is absolutely terrifying. And we should be really concerned about what that means, not just for this, but what that means for society overall and in general.
Well, one of the ultimate checks and balances in this situation, which we're going to go into now, is going to be the judiciary, because the judiciary has to be able to look at this with a sober and judicious eye. That's the whole point of the judiciary, because obviously once the institution has failed, which it has in education, even though it's been very subtle and parents don't know about it, you need the judiciary to really be on top of it. So what came to your mind next?
So when I went public, I had a huge number of parents contacting me to explain what happened to them. I had a huge number of teachers contacting me. A large number of teachers had left the profession or were about to leave the profession. And one of my concerns initially was that I'd overreacted to this. But what I learned was actually my experience was just a tip of an iceberg. There's a huge pile of ice below the surface that I was only just starting to learn. And common themes started coming out. One of the common themes that came out was how young people, how basically children at schools, had been coerced down these pathways, either by the school or by the peer, or normally often by a combination of both. And also, when parents had tried to raise their voices, they were no more successful than I was. When parents had tried to raise their voices, they were branded now as transphobic bigots. They were threatened now with referral to local safeguarding social services and safeguarding investigation. So there seemed to be a common mode factor that was tying all this together. So when I spoke to a number of parents, then we suggested the idea of a group litigation. And that's when we contacted the Bad Law Project. And now Anna Lufti the Bad Law Project. So, and it's Anna Lufti is the barrister now driving that forward with us.
So, Kevin, what are we aiming to achieve with this class action?
Well, we want a system whereby the parents' voices are now heard. One of the things that is really evident in this whole trans debate is that everybody else's voice has been heard, politicians, trans activists, but not parents. They have been removed. Their voices have been removed from this debate. So that's the first thing that we want. We want parents' voices now to be heard. We want the justice system and the public record to clearly define and to have laid down the damages and harms that have been done. So these need to be documented absolutely clearly. We need to stop this, period. And there is no way that without legal action, this will not stop. The only thing that will stop this is effective and powerful legal action. For that legal action to have teeth and to be effective and powerful, the best way of giving it teeth is to have financial clout. So one of the things that we will also be looking at is seeking financial compensation for the people and the parents who have been so hurt and damaged. We recognise that no amount of financial compensation will repair the damage and harm that is being done, but financial compensation will be one of the most effective tools in stopping this movement from continuing.
Well, as you say, it's you cannot undo permanent damage. So one of the ways of rectifying and ascribe and you know, providing justice in a way and a deterrent to any future ideologues who try this is to make it a financially very punitive for them. And I think that's absolutely right. So at what stage are we? Can you tell us how many people are involved in the class action? Can you tell us a little bit about them? Obviously, a lot of people want to remain anonymous because it's a very, very traumatic thing.
That's right. It's been hugely traumatic. So I've largely been the front face of this. A lot of families are basically trying to pick up the pieces. A child has been estranged from the family, and the family are trying to rebuild those relationships, or the child is on the point of being estranged. So very few families actually want to come forward publicly. So one of the things we're looking at doing is putting anonymity orders in place for the victims. So that's kind of where we're standing at that at the moment.
And how
I would say some of the stories are horrific that we have heard, just absolutely beyond shocking. They've left my legs shaking as I've heard the way that parents are having their rights as parents completely subverted.
Well, it's indicative of something much more malign in society, the absolute desire to destroy the family, because the family is the way that we actually transition wisdom from one generation to the next, and it's really important. So these ideologues that it's all part of the same movement, actually. Which it was described to me the other day as this movement, this ideology, what's loosely called wokeism, is a universal solvent. It will destroy everything it touches, and I think it's really, really important that we're going to take this to the courts and make sure that the courts can apply their own level of sober and judicious thinking over it. Because if we don't, and if the judiciary is gone, which we have to have faith that it isn't, we're in real, real trouble.
The judiciary is the last thing that we've got to hold on to here. I mean, things like Ofsted, Ofsted's come in for a lot of criticism, but Ofsted's kind of at the end of that chain that I talked about before, of this conspiratorial change to the Department for Education. Ofsted did an inspection of New College Swindon. They downrated every single area of New College Swindon. Every single area was the college must improve on teaching, on leadership, on careers guidance, and so forth. The one thing that Ofsted said was good was the LGBT club.
Oh, God.
But he said it was great to see staff and students working together.
It's almost funny. It's so ridiculous. It's almost funny. I'm sorry to do it, but this whole another thing that I was speaking about the other day is that isn't so much the tea, but the tea is very, is a cause of great concern to certainly parents for the reasons we've discussed. But it's the queue as well, because the queue has changed its meaning as well. Because queue would have meant in the not too long ago, you would have thought queer would have been, indicative of homosexuality, but it's not actually. Queer is a political position. It's an anarchic, society destroying political position. It's not just a sexual orientation. It's very, 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 very dangerous. So the idea that Ofsted are applauding an LGBTQ++ club. That's a very homophobic position to adopt, because why should lesbians and gays who basically the position of lesbians and homosexuals and bisexuals as well, if you're believe in that sort of thing, is that it's a position based out of love. So those hard fought for rights come out of love. They don't come out of about mutilating your body, for example, or a political ideology. And therefore, the fact that these letters can even be put into the same list, to me, is a gross misuse of language and a grossly homophobic abuse of lesbian and gay people.
I couldn't agree more. I think the other thing as well, coming back to your question before about conspiracy versus cocker, looking at here with that Ofsted report, is the end point of that conspiracy.
Kevin, you mentioned the Lib Dems earlier. Can you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. So in the meeting in July 2015, there was two Lib Dem representatives there, Baroness Barker and Helen Belcher. And at the same time as the Lib Dems are organising this incredible meeting, bringing together trans activists and civil servants, the Lib Dems are receiving huge amounts of money from the pharmaceutical company. That company is Ferring Pharmaceuticals. The Lib Dems have had nearly £1.5 million in contributions from Ferring Pharmaceuticals from about 2013 to 2019, and certainly overlapping that time when this meeting was held.
Dare I ask what Ferring Pharmaceuticals manufacture?
They manufacture puberty blockers and testosterone.
Oh, my Lord. Didn't see that one coming, did I? No.
So this is not cock-up at all. This is conspiracy. There is no reason that Ferring Pharmaceuticals would want to make that sort of contribution to a political party. They haven't made it to any other political party. And to the best of my knowledge, no other political party has taken that sort of money from a company that manufactures puberty blockers. Not only does Ferring Pharmaceutical manufacture puberty blockers, but they're also very tightly tied to the Russian government. So the chairman of Ferring Pharmaceuticals is a honorary Russian fellow and received from Putin an order of friendship. So this starts stinking. And these may just be coincidental connections, but on something as serious as this, then we really need to start thinking about those connections a little bit more robustly and checking that they are coincidental or not.
Well, Putin is on record as talking about the West in general as succumbing to all of this stuff in terms of the woke ideology and transgenderism. So, obviously, without evidence, one can't say anything. But it certainly would be in the interests of anyone who doesn't want the West to flourish to undermine our confidence in ourselves via any means necessary. It's it's called total warfare, isn't it?
There needs to be some serious questions being asked about this and about that connection, especially when there are so many people now who have suffered such severe harm and the way that the education system has been so undermined by it. And this is why, ultimately, this legal action is so important, because this does not anymore look like a cock-up. This looks like a fairly organized and well-designed conspiracy, well-funded by people with vested interests and pushing down an ideology that they know has got no scientific credibility and support at all, none whatsoever. So coming back to our action, you know, one of the things that we obviously need is some money into the crowdfunder. And yeah, the plea is to please, if you can, do help with this crowdfunder. Because what we're after and what we're against is this conspiracy that would appear to be forming in front of our eyes. And the freedom of information request from the Tavistock really starts pointing to the strength of that conspiracy and the need for a well-funded fight against that.
Absolutely. And it's the very reason that the Bad Law Project exists. And I think it's probably, in fact, it is absolutely the most important thing that we can do for our future, all of our futures. Because if we don't protect our children in school and we don't go back to, supporting and encouraging the family, we're going to have a generation of very, very upset and damaged young people who've been indoctrinated to believe something that's not true.
And I think we already have that. And I think this is going to take many, many years to unpick and to rebuild and to compensate for the damage and to recover from the damage.
It takes someone who's been right up against the front of this to stand up and have the courage to do it. You've not just lain down. You've gathered together these parents, and we're going to go right for the Department of Education. We've got to reverse this tide. And as you say, it's going to take time, but this is the first punch on the nose to say we want to reclaim education and we want to reclaim the family.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Kevin, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. And I mean, I would ask you to share a story, but actually it's so horrifying and it'll all come out soon anyway. We're going to start sharing these stories of what people have been through. And, you know, it's harrowing and hard to listen to. But thanks for taking the time to talk to me this morning, and apologies for my sort of bad, sore body look.
Thank you for having me on, Lawrence. And thanks for all the work that you're doing at URN as well.
Pleasure.